You can learn a lot about a person or a group of people by what they do or what they say when they begin a new venture. When they take a new job or begin a new relationship or, say, start their time as a president. And you can also learn about a group of people in that way, like, say, a congregation. It was 114 years ago that the good people of St. Mark's Berkeley on the south side of campus recognized that the wilds of North Berkeley were changing. Instead of pastures and oak woodlands, it was rapidly becoming homes and lots of homes. And so they began a mission here on the north side of campus that would become All Souls Chapel. But first, before it became a chapel, they started with a school, a Sunday school. The beginnings of this parish were a gathering in people's homes teaching. And it's something, a pattern, a priority that has carried generation to generation. And it remains still that anybody who walks through those copper doors, no matter how young or how old, can learn how to practice this way here. And these first actions that offer a window into what might be, you'll find them in all the Gospels as well. In John's Gospel, for instance, it's the second chapter, and Jesus' first major act is at a wedding in Cana of Galilee. They have all this water, and the wine has run out, and Jesus turns water into wine, his first sign of many to come. In the synoptics, the first act of Jesus always follows the temptation or the testing in the wilderness and the calling of the disciples. In Luke's gospel, he goes back home, goes to Nazareth, and it's in Nazareth, in the synagogue. Everybody is gathered there, and he is handed the scroll, the prophet Isaiah, and he reads it, that the captives will be released, the good news will be preached to the poor, that the oppressed will go free, and declares that in their hearing it has been fulfilled. But refuses to do any of the amazing acts of healing he has done other places. And so they throw him out of the town and attempt to throw him off the cliff. That's how it starts in Luke. In Matthew, it's totally different. The disciples are called, the crowds are gathering, and he goes up a mountain, sits down, and begins to teach. And so for Matthew's gospel, the Sermon on the Mount serves as the cornerstone that the entire gospel is built upon. And in your hearing, the second time, we heard, it's all right, we got there. We heard the significant act, the first significant act of Jesus in Mark's gospel. And it's an exorcism. Now, an exorcism, that's a choice, right? And it's a choice with a purpose in Mark's gospel. Because Mark's gospel is a gospel that is getting someplace in a hurry. Right? This is the gospel that is, we believe, the earliest written, probably in Rome, under tremendous persecution. And the writer of this gospel It's like it's being propelled forward, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. And one of the ways that the gospel writer does this is they use this word over and over and over again, euthus in Greek. It means immediately. It's used 40 times in this gospel and 11 times in this first chapter alone. The translators into English, it's used so often they can't use it as immediately every time, because otherwise every sentence would start with immediately. And so it's just then, at once, immediately. The gospel is moving forward with this intensity that you will not find in the other gospels. I mean, for instance, we are in the middle of chapter 1. Jesus is already a full-grown man, has been claimed as the beloved in the river, has been tested in the wilderness, has proclaimed the kingdom of God has come near, and has called disciples in a half chapter. Mark wastes no time. Because for the writer of the gospel, there is no time to waste. This is an account of Jesus the Christ, the Son of God, that is a blow-by-blow tale of a struggle. A struggle of realm against realm. A struggle of the liberation of the kingdom of God against the oppression of the empire. And yes, the Roman Empire was the name on the top of the structure then. We just have different names for it now. And this struggle starts in Capernaum in Galilee, in a synagogue, in one man's body. And that's where the struggle always starts, isn't it? It starts with an encounter in one person's body. Whenever there is a struggle and someone is able to stand up, whether it's a struggle for justice or truth or integrity, it starts with one body. And in this case, it starts innocently enough. Jesus and his brand new disciples are in Capernaum, right? We've just heard that they've been called from their fishing nets, and it is the Sabbath, and so they go into the synagogue to worship. And Jesus somehow teaches. We don't know how that comes to pass, only that he does. And whether or not he was taught by John the Baptizer or another, somehow what he says, how he says it, blows their mind. That's what the Greek means on astonished. They cannot believe this. Perhaps it's because he speaks with such authority. Because immediately there's a reaction. Just then, immediately, there is a man in the synagogue with an unclean spirit who cries out. Now, a word here about what is unclean. It can be really hard for us with 21st century ears to take in what is happening in this scene, but we have to remember that in first century Palestine, issues of clean and unclean, of well and unwell, were not primarily biomedical issues. They were primarily social, cultural issues. so that when somebody wasn't in their right mind, or their skin just wouldn't heal, or their bleeding wouldn't stop, they were unclean. Right? I mean, with all these conditions, the concern was you're putting the entirety of the group at risk. I mean, what they have could be catching. And so they are pushed out so that the group can be whole. That's how it worked. Now, when I did say first century Palestine, what I actually meant to say was 21st century America. Because while we have a very different understanding of a biomedical cure, this notion of keeping us whole by pushing them out, the fear, the disgust, the repulsion is just beneath the surface. And so we've written housing codes or laws to keep them away from us. We restrict access to what keeps people healthy and whole in subtle and not so subtle ways. We build walls, many, many kinds of walls, all to keep us clean and pure. So what does Jesus do? Jesus does not have this man removed. Jesus calls out the demon, tells the demon to leave, and with convulsions and a loud cry, this demon leaves the man, no longer has power over him anymore. Jesus makes the unclean pure. And does this, again, the word is, with such authority. And I wonder if this is what triggered the demon at the start, and what has the people who were present there so amazed that they tell everybody they know, was this righteous use of authority. Now, often I think we understand authority very narrowly as the ability to make our power felt, or a right to use might, or the liberty to do whatever one pleases. But at its root, authority is the power to create. It is the potential of authorship. It is the power to make things new. This is what the righteous use of authority is about. And it's what it starts in this one body, in this struggle. And because Jesus will not abide by the death-dealing ways, it is a struggle that will end with his body. The kingdom of God has come near. It's time to change. which is fine unless it means us. Where do we begin? We begin with a body. One body. Your body. My body. This body. With a claim that each body, no matter where they came from or how they got here, each body is holy. We take part in a struggle that has been happening for 114 years, for 2,000 years. A struggle to follow Jesus the Christ so that all may have life and may have life abundantly. A struggle that has us take part in making this realm, this kingdom of God, present here. Liberating people from the powers that hold them, one body at a time.